Hello and welcome to another edition of the In Context podcast. Today I'm with a friend of mine, Chris Baines. How are you doing, Chris?
Good, Ian. Good.
Great. So as you can tell, Chris doesn't have a Middlesbrough accent, although he's just down the road from me,
Eh?
in Loftus. Chris, can you just explain a little bit about who you are and where you come from?
Sure. So yeah, name is Chris Baines. I'm 54 years old as of a couple of days ago. And originally I'm from Essex, a place called Clacton-on-Sea. In Essex, that's where I was born. And yeah, I sort of had most of my childhood there growing up. I wasn't in a Christian home. I didn't have Christian parents. Went to church every now and again, went to Sunday school a couple of times, had a sort of, I guess, basic belief in God. We had sermons and hymns in assemblies. Remember those, the good old days? Yeah, so basically, spent time in England and then moved to, and we can come back to this later, but the sort of quick thumbnail is that ended up moving to London to play music, went to college in Newcastle for a bit. That then led to me going over to the States, where I became a Christian. And then I came back to England, met my wife, Becky, and her family were heading out to New Zealand. And so shortly after that, we ended up going to New Zealand. We're there for 26 years and came back to England 2 years ago. We had our nine children over in New Zealand, and we're back here in the UK in the north. And that's the, yeah, that's the thumbnail version, but we can go back over some of that, no problem.
Great. So just share a little bit about what you're doing in the north of England then. So you've been here, what is it, a year now? Or not that
It's
long?
nearly 2.5 years
Wow, is it that long?
yeah already. So we've been up here in Skelton for about 9 months.
Right.
So, and currently I'm serving as a full-time pastor alongside Robin Singleton, who's also full-time, and then Jack, who's a pastor, lay pastor, at Grace Community Church in Loftus, which you're very familiar with. So yeah, that's where we've been at. But we're living in Skelton, which is about 10 minutes away.
Right. So what brought you to the northeast of England, then in particular Skelton and your church in Loftus?
Well, when we were down south, we were members of a church, and I was doing itinerant ministry, and working on some music stuff that I do. And in that time, we were praying about whether we were going to stay in England, and if we were, whether I'd be sort of pursuing a ministry opportunity. So initially, there was a bit of a sabbatical time. I'd been in ministry in New Zealand for 26 years prior to that, but we didn't want to just, I didn't want to just look through the jobs and just get a job, a church job. I really wanted to have a sense that it was a calling, I guess, and somewhere where the Lord really wanted us to be. So I do some work also for a ministry in the States, Church and Family Life. They have like a network of churches, mostly where the churches where the kids are in the worship and they sort of worship together. And I was going through the FIC list, looking at different churches that worship in that way. And in that process, I contacted Robin. And we were talking a little bit back and forth, and I saw from the church that we were quite like-minded on a lot of things, and had a good chat with him. And he mentioned that he could do with some help, if that was ever anything I would think about, pray about. So I did, and we talked a bit more. We came up for a visit with the family, and that led to a process of about 5 months where we went back and forth, did a lot of talking and meetings, where eventually the church voted for me to come alongside. As another full-time pastor elder at the church there.
Yeah. A lot of traveling backwards and forwards while you were making your mind up, wasn't it? It was,
Absolutely. In
you
two
must have
cars
been
as
keen.
well.
Oh, it's a good job it's not now with the price of petrol, or
That's
you
right.
wouldn't be there. Brilliant. So I think what interested me is I've seen you've got a site, your own website, where you teach music
That's
and
right.
you sell songs and things like that. So for me, why I find that interesting is for years we didn't have anyone in our church who could play a musical instrument. We had a couple of people who were like very basic. So whenever we worship, we had to use something called iSing Worship on our iPad, but the songs were limited to what we could have, and pretty much we were singing the same songs every week, which got a bit boring and repetitive. And I tried to encourage our members who could play basically to get involved, and that's what we did. And do you know what? It was better than actually using an iPad, but it took a
Yeah.
lot for them to get confident before they would do it. And used to get really embarrassed if they made a mistake. And I said, well, don't worry about being the perfect musician because I'm far from a perfect preacher. So if
Yeah.
we've got mediocre preachers, everyone will be happy with a mediocre worship band. So yeah, we did that. But that's for me, many of our churches really struggle on council estates to find musicians. And for me, it wasn't like I remember at school we had an opportunity to learn a musician. You had to listen to some, put some headphones on and listen to some high-pitched noises. And I can't even remember what they said, but I didn't know what they meant. But I failed this test. I might have been pressing it at the wrong noise, or I might not have understood what I was supposed to be doing. But basically, none of my mates grew up learning to play an instrument. And a lot of the time, people who come from working class backgrounds, or especially council estates, apart from the odd guitar, not many people have the opportunity to learn to play. But that wasn't so for you, was it? Because you, I presumed if you were a musician, probably you come from a posh background, but that isn't the case for you. Can you just share a little bit about your background and how you got into music and how ultimately that led to your salvation?
Sure. So I was sort of brought up in Clacton, Holland-on-Sea, similar areas. Went to school there. Clacton is close. It's not as bad as Jaywick. Jaywick is close, but Jaywick is famous for being probably one of the most deprived towns in the whole of the UK. And Clacton was, it was a bit rough when I was there as a young non-Christian and working in the pubs there and trying to avoid getting into fights and all that kind of stuff. My dad was a gas fitter, and so he had his own business, and we worked for the gas board some of the time. So when I was about eight, I started to have piano lessons. So I was, blessed that my parents were able to give me piano lessons. I was interested in music. I think I'd played around on like an old organ that my mum had, and they could see that perhaps I had a bit of a talent. So I went to piano lessons, and it's basically I didn't practice like I should have done. I was supposed to practice, but I used to come home and jazz up Chopin and play a lot by ear and play that way. So I'd always love composing, trying to make my own music and play for people. So I learned to play the piano. I did lessons, and then when I got to about sort of 15, 16, I was doing sort of my own composition. I got a keyboard that my parents bought for me, an electric keyboard, and then that led to me joining a band, like a top 40 band, when I was about 17. And that was a good experience. We went for 2 months around American air bases around Europe to play for the troops. So that was a bit of an experience as a 17-year-old. And then I did a stint where I was playing on a ferry, going back and forth to Denmark for like 7 weeks. And that was funny because every morning you wake up and I'd say, "Where are we, Denmark or England?" I said, "Denmark." I said, "Oh no, I was going to give my mum my washing." My mum would drive out and get my washing and do it for me. And then from there, that basically led to me going to play in a band in London. So I was in a rock band living in London, living in a flat there in Lewisham. And during that time, I wanted to sort of pursue music more, and I ended up going to college in Newcastle. So I actually came right up here, up north, a long time ago. Was living in student accommodation in Newcastle. And again, this point in my life, I was not a Christian, and I was completely caught up in that whole sort of lifestyle that went along with that, wondering where I was going in life, what life was all about, trying to find some purpose. I basically wanted to be rich and famous. That was my goal. I'm sure I can be rich and famous, which never happened, by the way. And then from Newcastle, I connected with a guy over in Los Angeles, a friend, a guitarist. And he said, "Why don't you come over to Los Angeles? Because it's the entertainment capital of the world. It's where you can make it." So I said, "All right, I'll do that." And this is very, embarrassing to say now, I sold my two keyboards that my parents were still paying off to buy a plane ticket. And I flew out to Los Angeles. And a couple of months later, I phoned up my poor mum and I said, "I'm staying here. I'm going to make it." And I had no money at all, and I was living over there in a friend of a friend's house, living off $1 noodles from the shop and cheap food. And that's actually that. So musically, that was my progression. And then I got into a band that was a really good band, and they had good prospect, and we were playing funk rock music. Again, the whole lifestyle that came along that, with the drink and the drugs, promiscuity was not good. And there was always that sense of something's missing in my life. I'm trying to find something that I haven't found yet. And after about a year, I was there for the big Los Angeles earthquake in 1994. I remember being quite shaken up by that. I'd actually, on one sort of night having too much to drink, I got one of my friends to do a tattoo on my wrist of a cross, which is quite unusual. And I used to tell people, I used to show them this cross and say, before you ask, I'm not religious. I just think Jesus was kind of a cool guy, and I thought the cross looked pretty good. And that's what I would say about this tattoo. And then the singer in the band, I mean, this kind of leads into the conversion as well. That's the music. I can stand the music if you want for a bit, but that was the musical side of things. But my conversion kind of changed things in the music side as well. So,
Yeah. So were you there for the riot as well, or did you go after the riots?
no, that was a long time before. Well, there were riots around different times, but not specifically the ones in Los Angeles, no.
Yeah, I just remember. Yeah, so I think it was about 91 or 92. I just remember that being a big thing. And basically, all your
Yeah,
songs was like LA on fire, but I think
that's
it,
right. Now, that was before that. This was an earthquake, my first earthquake. I would later go on to go through two more in New Zealand because I'm an earthquake chaser, it would seem. But this one in '94 was pretty big, and I didn't know what had happened. And of course, we didn't have cell phones, so I'm standing there trying to phone home and tell my parents, who are looking at the news, worried sick. But yeah, that was a wake-up call as well, though.
Yeah. And what about being in LA? So I think when you're looking for fame, so I've left home, well, when I say left home, like left Middlesbrough a couple of times for a fresh start, and haven't lasted very long. And I think when you're in the UK and you dossing on people's sofas and partying, and life's a little bit uncomfortable, but you're not really bothered because your mum and dad are just up the road. You can go and jump on a train and get back home. But what was it like? You've gone out to make your fame and your fortune, and then after a few months or a year or so, you're still like dusting on sofas. You haven't made it big. You're enjoying yourself, you're having fun, but, and I know it's warm out there, so that's one benefit, but you're quite far away from home. Was there a point when you thought, I'm never going to make it? Or did you always have that hope that one day you'd get signed and
I was quite optimistic. I remember when I was in London before I got to the States, I did think if I don't make it by the time I'm 25, and I was probably like 19 then, I think life won't be worth living. That's what I thought. I'd be so old at 25 if I haven't made it. But in LA, the thing about LA then and now, almost everyone you meet, whether it's the postman or someone at the garage or whatever, they're all a wannabe actor, model, musician, something or other. There's a lot of It's hard to have authentic relationships and conversations because everyone's really just kind of connecting to connect to someone to further their career, further what they want to do. And I mean, I did so many stupid things, like even thinking, oh, maybe I'll get picked for a movie. So I'd go and sit on a corner of the takeaway in the sort of rubbishy old street and smoke a cigarette and try and look cool with my dreadlocks, thinking that a movie director would drive past and say, oh, he'll be a great star in the next movie. Instead, they probably just drove past and thought he looks like a bit of an idiot. And so I'm there trying to make it. But we actually did meet, get a manager who signed us. And right before that, again, I was searching for the meaning of life that involved drugs, drink, relationships. And also, I ended up cleaning the house because I was cleaning houses in Beverly Hills illegally. That was my job, like cleaning houses. And every now and again, we'd be cleaning a house of a famous person. It's quite funny. Like, look at that! We get to clean the toilet of this person. That's awesome. It's, again, pretty embarrassing. But we were cleaning a house for this psychic lady, and she was making all these predictions, which I, later came to realize that there was a demonic side to this, and that's why there was accuracy. And she said we'd meet some guy with blonde hair, and we did. And we met these managers, and we had the whole, sitting in their apartment. Going from sleeping on my mattress in my friend's house to being wined and dined in an apartment in Malibu, saying, you're going to make it, you guys are going to be great, all of that kind of cheesy cliche talk. But we did sign with them, and we were signed to do five albums and tour Japan, and we did some recordings. But it was just after that point when the singer of the band became a Christian.
Right.
And, you know, it was his flat. I was sleeping in the lounge, he's in there. And he starts talking to me about it. And my answer was always, look, maybe one day I'll settle down and be a Christian, but I want to do everything. I want to see everything first. And I'm fine with God. I already know who God is. And he kept sort of talking to me. His brother became a Christian as well. And so we'd be in our rehearsals, and we had this rehearsal room. It was opposite a band called Rage Against the Machine. I don't know if you remember them, but that was just an old rock band. And they had this rehearsal room over there. We had ours. And we were in there drinking and playing our music. And my friend's brother was just sitting in the corner reading his Bible. And he'd been into all the same stuff as me, like the occultic stuff and everything. And we used to have these arguments and talk about, you know, spiritual things. But then, of course, his brother, the singer, becomes a Christian. And I decide I need to move out of the flat because I don't really want to get sucked into this right now. So as I tried to move out, two things happened. One, he tries to give me a Bible, and I was like, no, I don't want that. Because, and my feeling at the time was, where am I going to put that when I'm sinning? Because it'll make me feel guilty. So I said, I don't want to have a Bible. And then he tries to shove in my hand this tape, and it said on it, Bible study tape. Now you remember tapes, don't you, Ian? Do you want me to explain it for some of the listeners?
Yeah, go on then. In case my daughter's listening.
Yeah, so a tape, everyone, is like a plastic thing with a load of plastic reel in it, and it had music on it. And if you wanted to go to song 10, you had to fast forward it and wait. And you could only listen to one at a time. And if it got all screwed up, then that was the end of it. Unless you had a little finger and a pencil, and then you could fix it, but we'll come back to that. So this tape was a preacher, and it was called Bible study tape. I remember looking at this tape, thinking, oh, that is so cheesy, Bible study tape. He's going, bro, have it, have it. And this is really interesting because I kept saying no because of pride. But on the inside, I was really interested. It's just no way was I going to let him know that. And that's stuck with me now when I speak to people about the Lord. I never read their external reaction because pride puts up a wall. And so I was saying, no. And he kept forcing it on me, and I'm glad he did. And he sort of forced it in my hand. I said, okay, I'll take it. So I go back to my apartment, and I start listening to this tape. And this guy is talking all about the occult and different things that I've been into, visualization. And if he'd have said it was all a load of rubbish, I would have stopped the tape. But he said it's very real, it's very powerful. And then he went on to say, but it's very dangerous. And I was hooked listening to this tape. And then he got to the end, and he was going to talk about the gospel message and what it is to become a Christian. So I pushed stop because I didn't want to turn into a Christian at that point. I thought that's what would happen. And then I came back to it and listened again. And this time, when he got to the end and he was talking about the gospel and there was like a time of praying, I thought I'd whistle while he's saying it because then I won't turn into a Christian. So I've got my Sony headphones on. I'm going, listening to these words. And then by that time, I think the Lord had got hold of my heart because I just sort of listened. He explained the gospel. And it was like all of a sudden, everything I'd been struggling to know, where I come from, why I was here, where I'm going, all these answers, it was all right there. And I realized that this was the truth I was looking for. And I just got down on my knees in that apartment, and I just surrendered my life to Christ right at that very time. No church, no discipleship, nothing other than another couple of friends that had got saved as well. So at that point, I was thinking, wow, my life has changed. But the two friends, we weren't in a church. So I looked on the TV and I could see all these prosperity preachers. I thought, I don't want to go there. And then somebody got hold of a bunch of sermon tapes from a Calvary Chapel church. And that was the first few months of my Christian life, was sitting in my apartment listening to sermon tapes, verse by verse. And that gave me a real grounding in the scriptures. Brand new Christian. And when I say brand new, Ian, I'm talking about, like, you know, we about a week after getting saved, me and my friend both get drunk. And we didn't have a discipleship leader saying that's not on as a Christian. We just looked at each other, convicted by the Holy Spirit, and we go, we shouldn't be doing this. This isn't right. And then I had a relationship with a girl that had to break off, but it was the Holy Spirit convicting me. I could have carried on, no one would have known. But there was just this newness of life. There was this change that took place. And then we started to go to this church in Hollywood that turned out to be a cult. But by God's grace, it was only from listening to that sort of more solid teaching for a few months that I realized that, because there were actors, models, musicians. It was perfect. Like, I'm now a Christian. We're in this really cool church. But they started to say to us, "Have you done your studies yet?" And we're like, "What do you mean?" "Well, we take you through a series of studies," which they started. "And at the end, if you complete the studies, you're then a disciple. And a disciple can become a Christian. And a Christian is someone who becomes a Christian after they get baptized and get saved." So it was a baptismal regeneration. And I was like, no, that's wrong. And I'm in these discussions with these leaders, and I'm 4 months old in the Lord, arrogant as anything, right, but arrogant. And they're saying, "We've been Christians for 30 years, and you're telling us that we're wrong, and you've only been a Christian 4 months." I said, "Yeah, you're wrong. That's not right. I've already been baptized in my bathtub." And that's what had happened before with these other Christians. So by God's grace, even at that point, the word of God helped me to know this is not the voice of my shepherd. And so I got out of that and then got into a Calvary Chapel church, which I was at for 3 or 4 months. And they graciously gave me the money, loaned me the money to fly back to England and put my life right. I was overstaying illegally. I was working illegally. And bit by bit, I started to sort of put my life back. And that brought me back to England at that point.
Oh, so you're there, you're convicted that you're working illegally and that you're living in the US illegally. Was your dream put out of being a rock star, or did you still have hopes and dreams when you came back to the UK, or had God put something new in your heart?
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So at that point, myself and the singer, we thought, we're Christians now, we can use this band for the Lord. That was our thinking as, early new Christians. But several of the other members weren't Christians. Some of them were interested, and they were professing a faith, which later proved to not be a true faith. So at the point that I left England, I was still, sorry, left the States, I was still in the band, and we'd actually signed a contract to do these five albums. So my plan at that point was thinking I'd go back and try to come back legally. That's what I thought. It was a struggle to leave, and I remember going to a specific car park around the corner from where I was staying, and I sat in that car park, and I remember just, weeping and saying to the Lord, "Is this is really hard to leave everything and go over back to England." And I knew that it was the right thing to do. So I flew back to England and then went through the Yellow Pages, basically phoning up churches saying, "Do you believe in the Trinity?" "No." "Okay, do you believe in the Trinity?" "Yep." "Okay, you'll do." Walked into a church. This was a church down south. And as I walked into this church, because I thought I was the only Christian in my town, in Clacton, and when I came back, I also came back, by the way, with Bible and Bible study tapes. And I thought, I'll just dish them out and then all my family will get saved. "Yeah, listen to this, listen to that, listen to that." That didn't happen quite that way. So I go to this church and I walk in and I see a family that I recognize because I went to school with this girl and her sister was Becky, who I'm now married to. So she's five, Becky's 5 years younger than me. And this family could not believe that Chris Baines was walking into a church. And I knew their family when I was at school. And I remember hearing about her sister getting baptized and thinking, what a weird family. And at that point, the Lord's looking down, going, "Ha, have I got some news for you? You're going to go to the States, get saved, come back, and you're going to marry into that family." So from that point, I've been praying for a wife. I was probably 4 or 5 months old in the Lord at that point. I got to know Becky, started going to this church, and in those sort of next 5, 6, 7 months, as we were trying to work things out with the band, they got to a place where they were going to book a ticket for me to go back. And I was sitting in church, and the Lord really used a sermon very powerfully because it was a sermon about Elijah. When he goes to the mountain, the Lord says, "Why are you here, Elijah?" But before he gets to the mountain, for some reason, I decided to count the amount of days that I was going to be away, going back to America to record the album. It was like 40 days, whatever it was. It matched whatever the story was in Elijah. And I remember thinking, yeah, that's God's confirmation I'm supposed to go. And then the preacher said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And it was like the Lord used those words to make me think, why are you going back to America? And I went home, I was struggling with it, but I realized that the way they'd set things up, though I was coming back, it would require me to have done a few sort of jobs illegally. They were saying, look, you need to play in some clubs. I said, but is that legal? I said, no, it's not really, but it's, we'll work around it. It's necessary. And so I was really struggling with that because I knew I had to make the right decision. And I remember getting up one really cold morning, about 5 in the morning, doing a conference call with all of the band and basically telling them that I was not coming back. And I devastated. And then my friend, the singer, he was with me in this as well at the same time. My whole family were devastated. My parents had basically got to the point of divorce from supporting me financially to make it in the music business. I'd finally got a contract. All my friends, I'd been working in a wallpaper shop in Clacton, and I said, I'm leaving to go and record this album. They got me this big card, and I'm going back saying, I have my job back. I said, I can't do it. It's not what God wants. And they were absolutely devastated. And I still have to this day a letter from a Los Angeles entertainment attorney advising the band to not go ahead with me because they said, this guy's got these convictions, and I've told him he either needs to leave, follow, or get out of the way. And if he stays with you, you're probably going to just keep coming up against his convictions. And that was a really hard decision. So, straight away at that point, I'd left everything that everyone around me knew I'd been working for my whole life. But, and this is kind of answers your question as well, I couldn't understand that what happened in my heart was I had a greater love for the Bible than I ever had for music. And that just blew my mind. It was like, wow, I love God's word even more than music. For 6 months, I couldn't even listen to the music. It was so painful because, second guessing myself, but I knew I can't go back and try and make this work for the Lord. It's too much compromise. And I was going to this church, and I also had a friend who was in prison. He was an ex-para. He'd gone to prison because he'd threatened to shoot his partner with a rifle. So they took him out of the paras, put him in prison. And I wrote to him when I was in America, and he sort of made a profession of faith, and he invited me to come and share my testimony at this chapel. So I go into this prison, there's all these rough-looking blokes sitting in this room, and for the first time ever, I start telling my testimony. And as I'm speaking, I'm remembering these little phrases I read in a book or heard on a tape. And if I listen back now, I'd probably be embarrassed about it. And at the end, the guy leading it come up and he said, there's two guys here who've been really impacted. I've just prayed with them and they've just responded to Christ. I mean, I don't know how true that was at the time, but at that point, these guys had given their lives to Christ. And I came home and I remember just saying to the Lord, if my whole laying down of the music was just to see these two guys saved, it's worth it, Lord. And there was just this, zeal, and I'm only sort of not even a year old in the Lord at this point. Zeal and a change in my heart that God has something greater for me than just the music. And he put in my heart at that time, I believe, a passion for his word and for sharing that for others. And yeah, from there, continued to listen to these sermon tapes, started to do a few Bible studies, and it was in that process that I feel the Lord put in my heart early sort of seeds to go into ministry.
What did that look like then to go from you're working in a wallpaper shop, you'd given up your dream, but you felt a calling to ministry? How did you progress? Because did you have any music qualifications or any qualifications at all, or did you just.
No, I didn't have any formal. I did a year at college at Newcastle, but like I said, I sold my keyboard and cut that short. It was humbling, but I'm so thankful now to the Lord. So, I tried to sort of paint the picture. Here am I, a Clacton boy from Essex, whose attitude was, I'm not going to be like all of these other losers here who just never do anything with life. I'm going to go and do something with life and be rich and famous. And I get this big, bon voyage card. We're going to know Chris. He's going to do this album. And then I'm back. They can't give me my job. So the only job that was available was I go in and I get a job as an estate agent in the high street in Clacton. And to me, that was like the most humbling thing that I've gone from like, hey, I'm going to be rich and famous. Now I'm going to be an estate agent in Clacton because I just needed to get work. I was there for 8 months, but that was such an amazing time because in that time, I was able to share my faith with the colleagues. I was able to see how God blessed it when you just need to do what you need to do. And whilst I was going to the church, I was getting opportunities to lead Bible studies. So that was, yeah, it was a challenge like that, but the Lord was preparing my heart for ministry. He was helping me to go through difficult situations. One of the lessons that he was teaching me in this whole time, I believe, that stuck with me, 30 or so years later, is sometimes what the Lord calls you to do can hurt the people you love the most, but you still need to do it. And that was what it was towards my family and friends at the time. And I'm happy to say now that, my parents, I believe, had trusted in the Lord and both passed away now. And both of my brothers, who were not Christians at all, are now both walking with the Lord. One's an elder. So God really did work in my family in that way. But yeah, so I was back in Clacton, working this job. And from that point, I had no plans, which is why when I met Becky and her family were heading out to New Zealand, I could say, well, look, I'm ready for a fresh start. So if the Lord opens the door, I'll come. And that began the chapter of going to New Zealand from England.
Cool. So, did you get married prior to going to New Zealand, or did you get married in New Zealand?
So we actually got married back in England. So we went to New Zealand first. So I went with Becky's whole family. And then we all came back for 2 weeks to get married and then back again. And that was a crazy time. You're talking about like there were no, email was not common then. So it was faxes. I had a pile of faxes like that that I was going back and forth, back and forth. So yeah, we came back to England, got married, and then went back to New Zealand, North Island of New Zealand, which would begin a 26-year stint there.
So what was it you did when you got to New Zealand? Was it music? Was it wallpaper? Was it estate agents? How
Well, it actually was music because we're in a little town and the piano teacher had just left. And so I started to do piano lessons and I ended up with 60 students a week. And
Wow.
in that part of New Zealand, because you have over here the exclusive brethren, do you? I haven't come across them as much, but I believe they're here. So, there's a cult element of the real exclusive brethren, one world leader, all this kind of stuff. There's loads of those people in New Zealand. And they at that time, it's like it was wrong to have TVs or listen to music or radio or anything like that. So they all played instruments. So 50 of my 60 students were exclusive brethren. So I'd go around to these homes and I'd be teaching them piano. And it's quite funny because it was a very legalistic, pharisaical sort of movement. I said to the guy once, I said, I'm a Christian as well, but how do you see me? You don't think I'm a Christian? He said, well, yes, but you're like in Timothy, it says the vessels of honor, vessels of dishonor. We're the vessels of honor, you're the vessels of dishonor. And I was like, well, how comes then when I'm teaching your children, I'm the one saying, I don't feel comfortable about playing this song because this is all about adultery. And they'd be like, oh, okay. Because it was not a heart thing, but they were lovely families. So I taught music there. And then after about a year or so, we got in contact with a pastor who's coming from the States to plant the first Calvary Chapel in Auckland. So then we moved down to Auckland and we were there for 4 years. And that's where I served as a worship leader, assistant pastor, youth pastor, 4 years in Auckland. And then we planted the second Calvary Chapel in Christchurch in the South Island after that.
Oh. So what did ministry look like in New Zealand then? Was it because I think when people look at New Zealand, I don't know, I think of like Lord of the Rings scenery and lovely holidays and stuff like that. But some of the programs I've watched, there's some quite a few social issues out there as well, isn't there? What was it like where you were? Were you in and around like poverty, the inner city? What kind of context were you ministering?
In the first place that we were up north, it was very rural, so it was very sort of sparsely populated. And when we came to Auckland, we were in the sort of city there, so that was very a lot more populated, a lot more suburban, a mixture of cultures and people. Hobbits are a nightmare in the church service; they always cause disruption. People just don't get that in England. You never want a hobbit in your church. So then we went to Christchurch, and we were in our home initially, then in a school. Ministry, in many ways, it's probably fairly similar to the UK. There's the traditional side of church has come from the UK, obviously people who've moved there years ago. But generally, ministry is the same kind of challenges that you'd have in churches. The one element that I think is definitely different and unique, perhaps to New Zealand, is because they're a pioneer nation, because a lot of people came over as pioneers, you do come up against a lot of independence. And a lot of pastors, friends I have over there would agree with this, where people like to do things their own way because they're inventors and pioneers. And so there is a struggle sometimes to have that commitment in some aspects, not generally, but in some aspects of church, because it feels like we're being told what to do if we're committing to church every Sunday because we want to retain our freedom to do what we want to do when we want to do it. And of course, mix that with the culture of outdoor life. It can very much be, the weather's amazing today, so we can't go to church. And then there's winter sports, so we can't go to church. And again, I'm generalizing, but by and large, I'd say the ministry is fairly similar. But there's a lot of English culture in New Zealand. There's a bit of American culture as well. But for me, I mean, when we planted the first church in Christchurch, it was just us in our home. Had two kids at the time. Never done that before, really on our own. I wouldn't want to repeat it like that again. And that was a challenge, because of course, when you're a very vulnerable church plant without a lot of support, everyone who comes kind of thinks you're 90% the perfect church, and I'm going to spend the next 6 months tweaking the 10% to make it my perfect church. So lots of ups and downs during that period. But by God's grace, we were there for 17 years. I co-pastored with another guy for those last 10 years who's now pastoring there. And that church, 23 years later or so, is going incredibly strong. And that's a blessing for us because that was our heart, to plant a church, to train people up, and then to see that go past what we could have done with it. And we visited there before we came back to New Zealand. We have great friendships with the people there. So we're thankful for that ministry of that the church there. And then after 17 years, we spent another 4 years up in the North Island, serving at a church there. So started at the top of New Zealand, worked our way down, had nine kids, so it got so heavy that we almost slipped off the bottom, and then we came up again to Auckland and then over to England.
So you've never, so all your ministry experience up until recently was in New Zealand, and then you come back to the UK. How do you find ministering in the northeast of England then? What blessings have you encountered, and have there been any struggles?
I mean, doing the itinerant ministry down south got me to get around a little bit as well and see some churches. Because again, before I went into ministry more formally again here, I wanted to have a sense of the spiritual sort of climate as much as I could in England. Coming up north has been a real blessing. I've always like, Loftus is a deprived area, and there's something about ministering to people where you know what you're getting, and there's transparency, and there's no sort of sophisticated mind games that I really, really love and have always loved. And so the ministry here, we, as you do, we've had different challenges and trials in our lives, and in the last couple of years, there've been some real challenges and things that tenderize your heart and maybe give you a compassion that you wouldn't have otherwise, hurtful things, difficult things. And you realize as you sit down with some of these people and hear their stories, I'm thankful for the challenges I've had in my life that cause me to have an aching heart more when I listen to other people and their stories. So we're incredibly blessed to be up here, and just the interactions I've had with people, getting alongside people one-on-one, coming alongside them, sharing the Lord. I love to encourage, because people are always, they're often setting themselves their own expectations and thinking they should be this or should be that, or compare themselves. And in ministry, I always look at trajectory, because you could have someone who might be really spiritually mature, but they haven't grown for 10 years. And you have someone who considers themselves to be, oh, I'm nothing. I'm not really, much at all compared to this person. They've only been a Christian for like 6 months or 7 months. But the trajectory of growth in their life is very steep because they're getting closer and closer to the Lord. So I always look at trajectory, not so much where that person's at. And I've been encouraged to see here, in coming alongside people, see growth in people's lives that has happened before I got here, to see how Robin and the others have ministered to the church here. Up north compared to down south, I don't know if I've had enough experience in England to qualify, but certainly in that more sort of housing estate type ministry, deprived area, whatever, however you describe it, working class. There's something special about that, I think. There's a gratitude that the people can have that I don't think you always have in other contexts.
Well, I think it's interesting because Gary and Steve were talking last week on the podcast that they did about how sometimes we can over-egg the difficulties and the challenges in areas of deprivation and hard places. And one of the questions they were asking is, are people put off from ministering in areas of deprivation because the people who are already there like over-egg the difficulties and put people off? And so one of the things that we've been trying to do over the last few weeks and will be in the next few weeks is encouraging people to see the benefits and the blessings. You've got, well, I was chatting with you a couple of weeks ago in Saltburn on the beach. We had a big bonfire and a party, someone's 18th, and we were fellowshipping together. And I tried to remember the names of all your children. I think Gabriel's the only name I can remember.
That's all right. That's like me on a good day, and I'm their dad.
I've got two dogs, and I can't even remember which dog I'm talking to, never mind other people's children. But especially with, how many of you got with you? Eight are there? Have you got
Eight.
in there? So you've brought eight kids from New Zealand back to England, and then from back down south where you know up to the north of England. So just share some of the blessings that it is raising your kids up in the northeast of England. You've come to a former mining town that is known for its deprivation, but there's a lot of beauty in the area, isn't there? So what are
There
some of the
is.
blessings that you've found?
I think one of the blessings that's probably been unique to our family in some ways, a very special gift from the Lord, is compared to down south, where it's incredibly flat, the scenery up here is very similar to New Zealand. So there's just something special about, driving out in the car and going up and down and around, and the scenery that does remind us of New Zealand. We love that. The kids have absolutely loved the history. So castles, like we've been English heritage members for the last 2 years, and getting around to as many places. So they love the history. They love the church history as well that you can find around the country. We love the people. I mean, I was in Newcastle, like I say, for a year at college, and that was fun being around the people there. I'm careful what I say because, I know you're in Middlesbrough and that's close to Sunderland and we can get in some trouble here, but never mind. Even thinking about up north, to be honest, when we were talking about the church and we're considering it, there was some hesitation just because of what I'd been told as a kid and thinking up north, what's it going to be like? But the call to the church overrode that, and we just knew this is where the Lord wants us. But then coming up, I'd say that all that's happened is it's just become more and more of a blessing. Not just the area, the scenery, but we love the people. We love they're very friendly up here for the most part. They're very, very friendly. I quite like that it's a bit more direct as well. Down south, we can be a little bit too not say what we mean. And up here, I've learned if somebody says, "Oh, we can give you a ride to this place," and I'm like, "Are you sure that's on the?" I wouldn't ask if I wasn't going to offer. So okay, so now I'm learning to just say yes, thank you. Not all of this little put on. Are you sure? Are you okay? Only if you're making one. So I like that direct nature. One of the greatest blessings as well, being in ministry again is a blessing because we had that break. And something that was so special for me, really special, was when I got the job at the church here. The kids, the ones you could speak, because there's a couple of young ones, said they're so glad that we're getting back in ministry again. And that meant a lot because our children have seen the ups and downs of ministry and the challenges. They could have said, "Oh no, I don't believe it. Here we go again, the roller coaster of ministry." But they were so pleased, and that really blessed me. And they've really sort of jumped in serving within the church, been able to get jobs up here, interact with people, make friends. There's a lot of young people at the church, which is a blessing for them because our kids have had many years, particularly the ones who are older now, being the only kids in the church in their age group while we church planted and went through those hard years. And working alongside Robin and Jack, has been a blessing alternating preaching. And as you know, I know we haven't sort of touched on this, but with a view to church planting, if the Lord leads, that was part of the sort of agreement, I guess, in coming up here. And that's a blessing because we were not really thinking about church planting or necessarily running towards that. We know it's a difficult thing. It can be very difficult. It was before for us. And we had said, Becky and I, that the only way we could imagine doing it is if we were, working alongside some other mature leaders in that process, and also if we could plant close to a church so there was a good overlap rather than just being out on our own. And that's exactly the situation here. So, but what's really good, I think, for the church is because we've church planted before, the church knows that we're not just itching to fulfill our dream of church planting, and therefore they're just a means to an end. We're loving being at the church, and it really needs to be the Lord's timing. But we're willing, and we're looking to do that, at some point down the line.
I know it's early days and you've not, well, I'm not aware that you've picked a date or anything yet to plant the church, but there might be somebody out there listening who, after you've described how beautiful it is up north, especially in, well, basically you're in, I know you're classed as Cleveland, but it's Yorkshire really, isn't it, where you are? You're up on the clifftops, very, very rural, old like post-industrial like market towns and stuff. If anybody was interested in joining the church plant, what just share a little bit about your plans for the future and what things might look like in the coming months and years.
Sure. At the moment, we're at the place we're at is we've settled on Skelton, where we live, as being the place that we're looking to church plant. We tried to get a house in Loftus. It's not easy getting a house for 10 of you, of course, and we wanted to be right close to the church, but that just didn't happen. And when the one came up in Skelton, we also thought to ourselves, well, the Lord knows what he's doing, and if we ended up planting here, it might actually be a blessing. So before we even came, the church had thought Skelton was an area to look at. There's no evangelical church here. So Skelton, yeah, is about 10 minutes away from Loftus. And at the moment, what we're doing is we've just started praying. We've been praying all the way through, but more formally as a family. And we're soon, very soon going to be putting out a time where people can join us online if they want to pray just for half an hour. We'll probably do it probably twice a month, maybe, just to pray specific points for the church plant. In the coming months, we're looking at maybe setting up a basic website page, Facebook page, doing some leaflets, and getting the word out there. Both to potential Christians who might either be not in fellowship or maybe traveling from another church, and we don't want to pull people away from another church, we just want to make them aware. There are churches we're connected with that have also asked lots about Skelton and are very supportive in the sort of outer areas. And then from there, via leaflet drop, some sort of evangelism, potentially, an introduction to Christianity course. Those are the kind of ideas that we're thinking about. We haven't said to anyone in the church that there's any pressure at all for those who live near this area when we make that move to come to this church. Everyone has to make their own decision, but we anticipate there may be some people from the existing church. But if anyone's interested, then I guess to contact you is a point of contact first, but we will have some information up soon and a website or somewhere where they can get information, register their interest, find out more for that very purpose. So yeah, that'll all be up and running hopefully in the next couple of months.
And again, if there's anyone out there who's interested in funding this work, if you'd like to support this work in any way, whether it be prayer, finance, or coming along and being a pair of boots on the ground, then yeah, definitely get in touch. But I'll put up some links so they'll be able
Okay.
to catch you direct and a link to your website as well, because there might be some people who are listening who aren't too far away who fancy some music lessons. So,
Yeah.
what is it you do? Share a little bit, because you've still got a music ministry, haven't you?
Yeah, so basically, having gone through that time where I sort of laid down the music, essentially, years later when we're in New Zealand, I really felt that I was at a place where I could start doing music again because I knew that there was not the same ambition. It wasn't an idol in my life. And so 2001, I started to record some piano albums of hymns. And from that time, as well as being in ministry, I was recording music, putting it on CD then, and then gradually online. So that was to try and provide a little bit of surplus income, which was very, very small. I also worked as a paramedic for 12 years, as you know, bivocationally. So did music and then started to do a lot more online. Got to do a couple of like movie soundtracks, just you know, small things. And then the music has always been on the back burner because ministry has always been so all-consuming, and that's okay. But since coming back to England, because I wasn't in ministry when we first came back, I put together a couple of online courses as a kind of ministry business idea to specifically train church piano players. So for sort of 30 years of our combined experience as a pastor and a church pianist, so I basically did a full course and then several other smaller courses all online, teaching every aspect of what it is to be a church piano player for, and like you mentioned earlier, and when you've got people who just have a basic skill, for those kind of people who can actually take their basic skill and do enough to get by to support their church in worship so they don't have to play videos or play from an iPad. So that's gone okay, and we knew that we, as a family our size, we always need a bit of supplementary income. So that's been helpful, but I can put the links there, and there's all sorts ranging from, you know, a free course that I do to a more comprehensive course with over 165 videos helping church piano players to play. And the focus really is playing in a way that is not all about your playing and all about your skills. The whole purpose of leading worship, according to my understanding, is to uphold the voice of the congregation. Everything revolves around the voice of the congregation. Sometimes the best thing a church pianist can do is to shut up for a whole chorus and let the people sing. So that's the mentality of my course is all about. It's not all about us. It's all about the Lord and the voice of the congregation, which is the most important instrument. But yeah, I can put those links down.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that very often in our church.
Yeah,
The louder the better. Drown our voices out, if you please.
make a joyful noise.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I'll put them links up. That'll be great. And again, if you want to see Chris in person, in person, you're going to be playing at our Medhurst weekend, aren't you? The worship for the Friday and the Saturday, the 12th and 13th of June.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm looking
So,
forward to accompanying you when you sing that solo as well. That's going to be an awesome.
well, you'll know what I mean about playing louder when you hear me sing, brother. So,
Will sell tickets, though.
yeah, definitely, yeah. It's to record me to scare away the rats, I think it is. Yeah, so awesome. So you've gone from a ministry in New Zealand. Of planting the church where there was just you and two children, and now even if you just planted for your family, you've got a decent sized
That's right.
church plant with just your
We're a
family.
mobile revival.
And again, I think that model of planting close by, you don't have to go 50 miles away if you're planting the church. How can you reach a community that's lacking in a gospel witness, because there would be a lot of people who, although it's a 10-minute drive away, would struggle to get to Loftus for church from Skelton, isn't it? So
Absolutely.
again, just give us a little bit of your thinking in planting in Skelton. Why was that on your radar, and why do you think it's so important to do that? And could you see the possibility of another plant some time down the line?
Yeah, well, I think when it comes to church plants, I actually had an interview with a church in New Zealand who want to support us. And that was the question. They said, you know, to us in New Zealand, when you say you're going to plant 9 minutes away, we ask why? Because New Zealand's got 5 million people and, you know, spread out in the same size of England. And I said, well, there's a lot more people for a start. So you got that aspect. But I think Skelton, I think it was around about 13,000 or something. So Skelton's a town in its own right with a lot of people. And the church in Loftus is growing. And that's one of the aspects of the church plant is if the church keeps growing, that may precipitate a sooner move because and Robin's philosophy is the same as mine, that we would rather have two churches of 70 people than one church of 140, and continue to go that way. So Skelton doesn't have an evangelical church that we're aware of, certainly. And so another aspect is Skelton is not, it's not quite the same as Loftus. Loftus is a bit of a mixture of areas. It's obviously got, you know, some deprived area and there's some council estate, and it's the same here. On the other side of Skelton, we're in a sort of a newer estate. There's new people moving in, so it's a growing area. So that's one aspect as well, is you've got people coming in who would then perhaps be glad they could come in and have a church rather than come in and try and drive to a church. But also, our heart very much is to reach all people, regardless of class. But just like in Loftus, I think there's something to be said about a church where people can walk to it if they haven't got transport. And so that's another reason why I think it's good to have a church 10 minutes away. I mean, let's face it, there's plenty of people to have four churches in both towns full up if they were coming to the Lord. But then, in answer to what you said about church planting, that is so important to me. And right from now, and when we start the church plant, I want people to know from day one, we're planting the church with the intention to plant a church. I think one of the things I loved about the Loftus Church here is it had really messy edges. And what I mean by that is so many churches have got sort of tight boundaries and they've been that way for a certain time and there's kind of cliquiness and these are the people here and it's very hard for them to think, though they talk about outreach, to think of other people coming in and messing that up a little bit. And I'm all for churches constantly being messed up a little bit. You know, once people start coming into church, getting upset because their favorite seat has been taken by a new person, it's like, no, you've got to get over that. And in Loftus, what you see is this sort of wonderful collection of a core of solid members who are really committed. And that spreads outwards to people who are getting more and more involved, more interested. And that keeps going outwards to people who are coming every now and again, come through the cafe there, which is a great ministry. Non-Christians coming in, what's this all about? And I love that. I love those messy edges to a church. And so we would anticipate to hopefully have the same in Skelton. But yeah, I think there's so many reasons to have an independent church in this town and plant others from this point as well, Lord willing.
Awesome. Yeah, well, if anyone's holidaying in Whitby or in on the Yorkshire Moors, anywhere, the North York Moors, then pop along to Grace Community Church in Loftus and you can meet Chris and Robin and find out more about the church plant. If you'd like to support the church plant, then please get in touch via the links that I'll post at the bottom of this podcast. Or if you'd like any musical inspiration, what's the name of your website, Chris?
So the one that sort of covers all the courses is called thechurchpianoplayer.com. I can give you that link. And then I've got chrisbaines.com, because there's two sides. There's the church piano stuff, and then there's my own instrumental stuff that I put out on Spotify and iTunes and stuff like that. So yeah, you can get both those links. And I'll give you a link to the only active link regarding the church plant is a sort of family ministry newsletter that we send out. So people can sign up to that, and they'll certainly be updated with the progress as well. And if there's anyone who's, you know, part of the Medhurst churches listening to this as well, and the course is helpful, let me know, because I'll just discount what I need to make it work for you guys. So
Awesome. Oh, thanks, brother. That's great. Yeah, so follow the links. Try and visit in person if you can. Get along to the Weekender and listen to Chris live and some good teaching on council estate ministry. But Chris, thanks very much for joining me on the In Context podcast.
thanks for having me. It's been a blessing to chat.
Cheers, brother.